you know, I also look back and I was like, man, that's 5 years of mistakes. I've got to use these somehow. And so right away I said, well, if I'm going to do this, I'm going to have a plan and I'm going to have strategy. And then of course, you know, the big consideration was, can I build this company and still sort of retain the quality of life that I want?
That is Maria Rapitskaya today on the podcast. Hi, I'm Joel Pilger. Today is Wednesday, December 21st. Happy holidays, everyone. Hard to believe it's already that time of year. But today I am interviewing Maria on the topic of why small studios rule. That's here on the Rev Thinking podcast, where we're helping motion design and production studios around the world reach the next level.
Welcome to Rev Thinking. RevThink leverages years of experience and practical wisdom to help owners of top creative studios, so you don't have to choose between following your passion and running your business. Now here's your host, Joel Pilger.
Okay, let me ask you a tough question and be honest with yourself. If you run a motion design studio or a production company, do you live to work or do you work to live? I could also put it this way. Does your business run your life or does your business support your life? Hey, it's Joel here today. I'm talking with Maria Rapitskaya. I've known Maria for several years now. She runs Undefined Creative in New York, which is a small motion design studio that has been in business for almost 7 years. Now, what's interesting is most studio owners start small, of course, and then over the years they grow. But in Maria's case, she started small but has stayed small very intentionally. Now, some of you might know the article I wrote a few months ago called Why Small Studios Struggle. And if you accept the underlying premise of that title, it begs the question, well, why would anyone want to stay small? Well, today on the podcast, I ask her that question, and we also get into some related topics, such as, is there a bias in America, in the United States, that says all growth is good? And can having an interesting personal life benefit your work life in your business? And what if those two were more integrated? Well, I know you're going to enjoy this conversation with Maria on the topic of why small studios rule.
Well, hello, Maria. It's nice to be with you today.
This is pretty awesome.
So here I am in Brooklyn. How far are we from Manhattan here? Just a couple miles as the crow flies?
Probably not even. We're downtown, so we're about 2 train stops out.
Yeah.
For those of us frightened of leaving the island.
And we are what, on the 31st floor?
We're on the 31st floor overlooking the New York City Harbor.
Now, what I think is so interesting is that this is your studio and it's also your home.
Indeed.
So let me ask you a couple questions to let you tell people who you are and what you do. So Undefined Creative is your studio. And what is Undefined?
So Undefined Creative is a creative agency I started about 6.5 years ago, in March of 2010. And our focus is on motion graphics and then whatever related complementary services clients need.
So 6.5 years, that's pretty impressive, because I'm thinking, obviously, just to get past year one, year two is quite a journey. So now that you've been doing it 6-7 years, like, hey, I guess this is going to go. This is going to work.
It pays the bills.
It's working.
I live here on the 31st floor overlooking the harbor. So
exactly.
Something's got to be going right.
And is most of your work for broadcast, network television, or is it ad agencies? Is it brands? What's sort of your body of work or in clients?
So we work a lot in TV still. My background is broadcast, and so is my executive producers. So we still do a good chunk of work for TV shows, broadcast design packages, and in-show graphics. But then we've also expanded into other markets. We do videos for social, for marketing, for events. So I think right now we're probably at about 50-50 on broadcast versus all other screens and everything else.
Got it. And your executive producer, Kathy, is that the extent of your full-time team, is you and Kathy?
No, we actually have one more full-time person with us now. His name is Steven. He's our lead designer / animator. So I'm grooming him to get bigger and better, and hopefully become a second CD at some point.
Got it. And so full-time size of three, but so tell me about when you guys get busy and you're taking on projects, how do you scale up, and do you have often three or four freelancers in the mix? What does that look like?
It depends on the season, depends on the workflow. But yeah, normally when it's slow, we try to keep it in the family. The moment that we get busy, we start adding on people, whether that's, the audio post house that we work with, or the editors that we work with, production people, whatever it takes, freelance designers. And we've got our little roster of go-tos. Obviously, sometimes people aren't available, and then we start looking outside the network. So,
and are those freelancers often here in New York, or are they in the U.S. or around the world? Does it vary?
You know, it varies. I would say that with freelance people, we are usually unconcerned with where they're located. Mm-hmm. For our full-timers, for both, Kathy, myself, and Steven, and anyone else we hire on a full-time basis moving forward, unless we're starting Undefined Creative LA, I think we want them to be within reasonable commuting distance to New York, because we do get together.
Yeah, sure.
Once or twice a week, especially if we're not too busy. It's not every day.
Right.
But we do like to see each other's faces.
Now, I'm curious, before Undefined, what were you doing? Like, what was sort of the story that led you to start Undefined? Were you freelancing before that? Did you have a job, a position somewhere? Were you here in New York or elsewhere?
So directly prior to Undefined, I had another company for roughly 5 years with a partner who was also a boyfriend at the time. Seems to be a very, very common story in this industry. We just can't get away from each other. So, yeah, you just date from the pool of the people that are working with you until midnight. So, at the beginning of that 5 years, I did a lot of freelancing as we got the company ramped up into something that we could actually sustain ourselves on. And then probably it took about 2 years before I said I can't freelance on site anymore. So, those first 2 years, it was really kind of a combination of things. But then the following three, we really sustained ourselves on client projects. And so, these days I look back on it and I see that as kind of my business school 1.0. I don't feel that we were a successful company by any means. I think we were really just two freelancers.
Great.
With a joint website and this idea of a company, but we really had no idea of what we were doing. To our credit, we were super young and really ambitious, and we worked hard, and we believed in what we were doing, but by and large, we were clueless. So to answer your question, prior to Undefined, I had a test run at doing this, right? So this is the real thing.
Right. Well, it's interesting because I see that it's a common pattern that a freelancer and maybe another freelancer or three will come together under a name and they say, hey, we have a company, but they're really freelancers and they continue operating as freelancers, but they're sort of hoping to build a name and a reputation. And some small studios make it through that transition and they have their own identity. They get their own clients and they're not just doing freelance work for other studios. But in your case, what were some of the types of companies that you freelanced for? Because I think you freelance at Trollback for one and other people here in New York for those years.
Yeah, I freelanced with Fuel quite a bit, with Charlex a couple of times. Curious Pictures was another one. But we did have our own clients. I don't want to make it sound like we just, went and pulled freelance work and took it out of house and worked from home on our pajamas on things that Charlex was giving to us. That was certainly not the case, especially back then, because you're talking, we started this in 2005 when getting work out of house from a major studio was fairly unheard of. People just didn't do that unless you were a huge name and it was a West Coast, East Coast thing.
Right.
It never actually happened. But we did have some clients. We worked with The Maury Show That's when that relationship got started. So when I say that we remain two freelancers, it wasn't necessarily because even of the caliber of work that we were doing. It was really a testament to how we were running the business, the fact that we had no strategy, no plan, no marketing plan, no business plan, no finance plan, no, you name it.
You could go on.
You know, blank plan.
Right.
There was none. We had I had a vacation plan always.
Yes. Yeah, so we'll get to that.
but you know, it was interesting because, like I said, I still look back on it and I wonder how we kept that afloat. A lot of it had to do with a good chunk of our work was coming from a place that was completely outside of broadcast and television. And, you know, we had a whole segment of work that we were getting that was actually, believe it or not, casino gaming.
Hmm. Okay.
And doing animation and illustration for video slots. So I think, it was just this really bizarre combination of events and clients. But at the end of the day, when I walked away, I really didn't even feel that there was a company there that was worth
right.
splitting, holding fighting, holding on to. It was just the clients are going to go where the clients want to go. And
there you are.
Done. Yeah. And here I am.
Now, I want to say that I met you probably 4 or 5 years ago.
About 4 this summer.
Okay.
Yeah.
And we met at the Motion Conference. But when I met you, I was immediately intrigued because, well, first of all, you're a thoughtful and reflective person. And when you spoke at Motion, I want to say that first year that you talked about designing your life, designing your career.
No, that was year 2.
That was year 2?
That was year 2. The first
what was year 1?
Was professional volunteering, actually.
Yes. Okay. Okay. So professional volunteering. The next year was, what was that title?
That was a Designing Your Life
Okay.
story.
And at that point, you and I became friends, and I actually had an opportunity, about a year ago, that we actually worked together, and I did some consulting and so forth to help Undefined. But I think what I found so interesting about, as I got to know you, was that you really didn't fit into what I would call the typical pattern.
How many times have I heard that in my life?
Yeah. Well, and so I think just to explain what the typical pattern is, I don't know, maybe it's this Western or American predisposition that we have that if we start a business, we want more, we want bigger, we want better. And so we're growing. We're looking for bigger and better opportunities. We always want to grow, grow, grow. And your Designing Your Life talk that you gave at Motion really sort of painted a different picture. It was a different paradigm. What was that? What was sort of the heart and soul of that topic that you delivered at Motion?
You know, I basically spoke to this idea that this mythological work-life balance that everyone likes to talk about these days is really only relevant when you figure out what on earth that means for you. And so that's going to be different for different people. And it has many components. There's the what you want to do with your work, what you want to do with your life, what you want to do with your time off, what's important to you, what's not important to you. And when you sort of figure out what you want your big picture to be, you start slowly filling in the blanks and working towards it. And the big picture is going to evolve, and it's going to evolve constantly. But, you know, the idea being is that, you know, there's really no one size fits all.
Right. Sure.
And if you go through life thinking that success means A, because that's what you've always been told and that makes sense. And you're like, yeah, sure. Success is A. And then you kind of risk being, you know, 60 years old and turning around and going, you know, I kind of think I had that wrong. So you're better off figuring that out at whatever point, whatever age you are right now.
Yep.
If you're not sure, my advice is think about it, because you could be headed in a completely different direction from where you actually want to go.
So in your case, what I heard you say was, I sat down at some point and you said, I'm going to design my life and my business, my career, this industry is part of that, right? But there was a certain amount of intentionality that you went through that process with that I think is unusual. Because most people just say, well, I'm going to start a business. It's going to be great. It's going to be amazing. We're going to make a lot of money. We're going to be famous. We're going to have all this freedom, right? But they, like you said, turn around many years later and say, wow, this isn't what I wanted, actually. So when you had the opportunity to define, sorry for the pun,
but when you said, happens all the time.
Yeah, when you said, I want my studio, Undefined Creative, to be about these things in order to create this kind of life, what was it? What were the big things for you?
So I want to preface that with, I had a lot of role models in my life for things to do and for things not to do. And I think case in point was some of the places that I've worked were definitely a very heavy influence on that. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, when I, you know, sort of in full disclosure, I started the studio around the same time that I was going through a lot of personal turmoil, breakup and a move. And so I literally had this blank slate that was now going to be my life. And I said, well, this is kind of my second chance, right? I tried sketching this once. I clearly did not get that right. Yeah. So let me try this again. So naturally, I was at a point in my life where a lot of soul searching just had to happen. And in restarting a company, I really had a lot of things to consider as to, you know, do I really want to do this? Why do I really want to do this? And one of the best role models for what not to do actually came from two people who I love dearly. They were ex-bosses who started a studio in their basement, and they loved doing what they did. And the bigger they grew and the heavier the overhead got and the more people, and it was just the classic tale, right? They didn't even get that big, Joel. They got to be about 10 or 11 people at the height. And they were miserable. They were working crazy hours. They barely saw their kids. They, you know, it was just, you've heard this, right?
Yes, very much. Very common pattern.
Right. But I was working for them in my early 20s, and I was quite impressionable. And I was already kind of pissed about my 2 weeks of vacation, and that was not enough for me. And right around the time where I hit the 5-year mark with them, I graduated to 3 weeks of vacation. But that was, I believe, according to company policy, that would be max. And so, you know, it was kind of then where I was like, I don't like this. Like, this just doesn't work for me. I don't want to live like this. And so I think with Undefined, that a lot of the decisions came from that. Now, my prior company, we ran it from home because, well, we were a couple and we didn't have startup capital and kind of just seemed like the only thing to do. And it was always a lot of smoke and mirrors and, you know, I mean, 2005, you
perception
couldn't say,
reality
and, yeah, but in 2005, you couldn't really go out and say, you know, yeah, we run a home office. What's the big deal?
Right.
You know, who cares?
In those
New
days,
York overhead, right?
Yeah. In those days, it really mattered what your address was and your office and
absolutely.
The environment and where clients could visit and all this stuff.
So we got a place on on East 20th Street. And it sounded really good because it was a Manhattan address. But if anybody knew Manhattan, they would know that we were so far east, we were practically in the river. And there was no commercial space over on that end. It was just Iverson Town. But yeah, so I already knew that that could work. And the climate in 2010 when I started the shop was that it was becoming very, very obvious that this remote sort of model that we were running, it was going to be the future. How long and how quickly, to what extent and how quickly that got picked up was still to be determined. But more and more I realized that another year or two and I'm not going to have to apologize for what I'm doing.
So you saw that trend changing and you realized, you know, the address, the facility, the environment is not so important anymore.
Yeah.
That world is going away.
So that was a big factor in saying, you know, I could try this again because I don't feel the need to start a company with massive overhead. I don't need investors. I can just go out and try and do the same thing I did last time. It's just, you know, now I'm alone. So that was sort of the part one of the decision. And then, you know, I also look back and I was like, man, that's 5 years of mistakes. I got to use these somehow. And so right away I said, well, if I'm going to do this, I'm going to have a plan and I'm going to have strategy and I'm going to figure out, I'm not going to be alone running this for long. And the person I hire is not going to be another artist. It's going to be someone who can do all that stuff that I couldn't care less to do and actually enjoy it.
You mean things like sales and...
Well, we can get to that later. Producing. That's a whole other animal. But yes, producing, financials, operations, insurances, you know, all, that's the junk I never wanted to see again. Right. And then, of course, you know, the big consideration was, can I build this company and still sort of retain the quality of life that... that I want.
Now, on that, I would say that is such a loaded phrase that you just said there in terms of quality of life, because most people hear that and they think, yeah, 2 to 3 weeks vacation and, you know, I have the flexibility since I run my own shop of how I work and when I work. But you've taken it to a whole nother level, I would say, because in your case, answer me this. Why was 3 weeks vacation never going to be good enough for you when you were employed?
Okay, so we're going to have to jump back a little bit here. So I grew up in the Soviet Union.
Okay.
That's A. So my idea of, you know, success is shaped by, you know, spending the first 10 years of my life in a communist country.
Okay.
Right? So from that, you could probably gather that success to me has little to do with making millions.
Right.
Now, I also grew up in a place where my mom had, I believe it was, she would take 2 months off in the summer. She was also always self-employed. She worked from home her whole entire life, and she ran a small business effectively in communist Russia from her house doing clothing design. So, you know, a lot of what you see here, I'm really just evolving what she started.
You are your mother's daughter.
I'm 2.0. So, you know, why was 3 weeks of vacation never enough? Because that is not how I grew up. So this idea of 2 to 3 weeks of vacation that you're begging someone to take and that you feel apologetic for taking, it's just not my idea of a good time.
So what is your idea of a good time? Because I think you sat down and actually said, I'm going to create a plan for my business to enable this life that I want to live and this lifestyle. And what did that look like?
Look, I don't want to make it sound like I work 3 weeks out of the year and then I
no,
don't.
No, we know that. We know,
look, the reality of it is that... I knew I had to surround myself with really good people that I trust. So the person I hired full time right away was the person that I could trust to leave my business in the hands of for, you know, whenever I felt like taking off.
Right.
The other thing is I realized that if I do all of my due diligence and do my hours tracking and really track our production cycles and workflows, I could figure out when it's safe for me to escape for how long in ways that don't necessarily create drama,
right,
you know, while I'm away.
Right.
Now, obviously, drama will always happen. Drama happens when I'm here, right? No one is immune to workplace drama. So I did a lot of that, especially in the first couple of years. It was about, all right, well, like, look, production's slowing down. I don't need to be here this week. Why am I going to sit here and barely work when I can put in a couple of, you know, 14, 16, however many hour days this week that I'm already here.
Yeah.
And next week I can be in Costa Rica. Right. So a lot of it just has to do with working smarter, which I think a lot of people in full-time positions can relate to, you know, those days when it's 3 p.m. and it's a beautiful day outside and there is nothing for you to do today. But you are sitting there and you are sitting there on the clock and you can't leave until 5 if you're lucky, or 6 or 7, depending on the industry that you're in. And like, what? That's stupid. Why do we do that to ourselves?
So what's the longest chunk of time that you've taken off?
The longest chunk of time I took was 7 weeks.
I know this, but I'm going to ask for our audience. And I'm guessing you traveled.
I did. I did indeed.
And for you, traveling is not like going upstate New York. What kind of places, when you do travel, where do you go?
So if we're going to take these 7 weeks in particular,
okay.
I started with a one-way ticket to Nepal because I wanted to do some trekking. So I did 17 days on the Annapurna circuit, and that was amazing.
And I'm guessing you're probably not on the grid when you're trekking, right? So you're fully out of pocket. Like you're...
For about the first 2 weeks of that, I was.
Like, you don't have a laptop in the backpack and...
No. Well, I took the laptop with me. I took a laptop with me because this was also a very interesting situation. We lost two big clients right as we were going into the fall, winter. You know, it was just a really odd time. And how can I put this? I knew that I could either use this time to do something for myself that will really reset me and clear my head and like take all of that stress and, you know, just everything that I was feeling as a result of like losing clients due to circumstances that were completely beyond my control. And I can just go and do something productive with this and just really give myself some time to like recuperate and rejuvenate and do something for me.
Well, it's interesting because I would say that is not normal. That's not really very normal. Most people who run a small business, if they had lost two clients and they said, I have a 7 week window, they would say, I've got 7 weeks to go find two new clients. I've got 7 weeks to build up, do a piece of spec work and do a new demo reel and create a new marketing plan. And you're sitting here shaking your head like, yeah, no, not me.
Not me.
What is it that's so, I don't know, what is it that's different about you, the way that you're wired, that you can, I don't know, so you can shake off that temptation to just fill every little hole of time with work?
So, you know, in this window of time, I saw an opportunity. And for the first time in my life, I bought a one-way ticket somewhere, and that's something I've always wanted to do. We got creative. My EP, actually, our friends who own a post house needed a part-time producer. So we split her hours so that it wasn't a burden on either company. And I said to her, you know, I'm going to send out a bunch of emails before I go to try and sort of reconnect with people. I'll do my best over this month or two before I leave on March 1st. And then you email me and you tell me when you need me to come back. And if there's work, I've got my laptop. I'll park somewhere with a good Wi-Fi connection. Just for the next like 3 weeks, don't talk to me because I'm not doing anything. But then after that, I'm good. And I've got a really good client of mine, always laughs, because I tried doing a conference call with him from like the middle of, I think it was Chitwan National Park in Nepal, where the elephants live. And the conference call didn't go so well because the signal kept dropping. And finally, he was like, look, we could talk when you return. It's not a rush, but just I'm going to need to know the story of where you were trying to speak from. But that's the other thing, too, right? It's like, you know, a situation like that. In reality, when I got back, it just made for a really great story with a client. And in the end, it wasn't a big deal. I think, you know, to answer your question of why can I do this? I am not my career. I love my career and I am very grateful for my career. I'm exceptionally grateful for my career. But that's just a part of my life. That is not its entirety. And if all I do is spend my time worrying about my career and ignore all of the windows of opportunity that life hands me to do some of the other things that I want to do, there are plenty of people, to your point, who would have said, yes, I'm going to drum up clients. But then there are also plenty of people who would say, you know, I've always wanted to make this film.
Sure.
And now I don't have work and, you know, I'm totally stressed out about this and I can't think about this stuff anymore and I need a break. I'm going to go shoot this film. and I'm going to spend 7 weeks on that, right? For me, I've never wanted to make a film, but I've always wanted to go trek in the Himalayas. So there I went.
There you went. Well, I think you also bring up something interesting that, you know, we come from such a place of work as a default. I find it sometimes a bit exhausting talking with other people in the industry, and all they want to do is talk about the job or mm-hmm. the work. And there's nothing against, like, okay, great, you did this really cool project, you got to work for this big brand, you did this thing for this great big TV network. But I've been there, I've done all that, and so it's a little bit, at times, like, okay, can we talk about something else?
Part of the way that we run the studio, and in our sort of client relationships model, you know, first and foremost, I just try to remember we're all people. You know, and everybody's got a life outside of their desk, and they've got families and hobbies and interests. And, you know, I think the fact that I am not my career helps me treat other people and see them as people and not the sums of their titles.
Yes.
And the work that they're bringing to me, which I think is just a horrible way to live life, personally. And so how does my travel and just kind of all the other, you know, I also don't want to make sound like, you know, travel is the only interest that I have on the side, but you know, it is kind of the oddball thing about me. How does that inform me? Well, yeah, man, when I think about some of the situations that I found myself in, you know, in places halfway across the world when I don't speak the language and I'm in, I don't know, and I've got to figure out like where to sleep tonight, or you know, You sort of learn to be a lot more zen about things, just naturally.
And maybe resourceful.
And resourceful. And also, you know, I'm into a lot of sort of like strenuous physical stuff. You know, I don't rock climb by any means, but if you give me a very large hill to walk up, that just put me on a path and say go.
Or mountain,
yeah.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's also, there's something for the physical challenges that you put yourself through that just teaches you how to grind through it when you have to. And sort of this sort of mind over matter.
Yes.
Way of looking at things. So yeah, I mean, I've learned a ton from my trips.
One thing I know is that people in our industry love working with people that are inspired, that are excited, but that are also interesting and diverse. I know if I was, you know, if I put myself in the shoes of one of your clients, I would think, gosh, I really enjoy Maria because she comes from a larger perspective. She's not from the United States. She's been all these different places. She's just an interesting and cultured person, and I can't help but think that's going to translate into the work that her studio does for me. Am I right about that?
I hope so. I mean, I really do. Right? Yeah. I really hope so. And I think, you know, I think a lot of our client relationships, I would say, would attest to that. Mm-hmm. I've got some very personal relationships established with a lot of our clients. And I think part of it is just, yeah, this ability to speak about things other than work, because I have plenty of things. And I think, you know, I think a lot of people do have plenty of things to speak about other than work. But I think, you know, we sort of, and I think this may be, again, like a very American thing, that there's this barrier between your work personality and your personality.
And your real personality.
I don't have a work personality. Right? Like, this is it.
Yeah.
So I might like tone it down a notch, you know, between when I'm out with my girls and when I'm out at a meeting. But really what you see is what you get. There's no duplicity in yeah. anything that I do. So, you know, perhaps that's something that comes across.
But it's endearing and charming in its own way. It's refreshing too, right? When there's there's no guile and.
Yeah. But we approach our projects the same way. We approach clients the same way. We cut through the marketing speak, and, you know, we really try to just get down to it and say, you know, how do we make your life easier right now? And what are you actually looking for? And, you know, just kind of cut through like the padding of conversation in so much of business these days.
Yeah.
again, it kind of goes back to we're people speaking with other people.
Now let's talk about growth and this idea of, I guess, challenging the assumption that all growth is good. Because when Tim Thompson and I connected with you and Kathy, it was a little over a year ago. What I found really refreshing was your approach to how you want to run your business and where you want to see it go. And there's an article, I wrote an article several months ago called Why Small Studios Struggle. And it got a ton of attention. And a lot of people read it, I think just because of the title alone. There's a lot of small studios, and when they see that, they say, oh wait, what's the trick? Like, what's the trick so that I can grow and succeed? And those certainly, there are principles and concepts for small studios that want to get to the next level. But I look at your model and I say, you actually have been very intentional about staying small. And I thought, you know, in some cases, small studios rule, right? Do you want to grow it?
I think the key for us is controlled, sustainable growth, right? Do we want to get bigger clients, grander work? Sure, if it means continuing to work with good people, absolutely. If it means taking on people that we don't want to work with, no. You know, I don't.
And that's clients as well.
And that's clients as well.
Collaborators.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. You know, our key thing is that we work with and for people who share a mutual respect of each other, each other's time, value each other's contributions, don't take advantage. And kind of that list goes on. But our growth does not necessarily mean doubling our revenue every year by any means. Mm-hmm. I think at this point right now, we're three core full-time people. They tell me they're happy with what they're getting paid, so I'm going to believe them. You know, I profit share, so I want to make sure that everybody feels vested in what we're building here, because I don't want to go through people every year. It's a painful process, and I don't enjoy that. The idea is that, you know, we're a core of three right now, and we want to maintain this and sustain it so that people's salaries can grow, that, you know, the whatever profit sharing we've got going on can sort of grow proportionally so that we don't have to worry about how we're going to make payroll. If we decide to bring on a couple of more people, it's possible in the next 2 or 3 years, but I think, you know, six would really be the ceiling, and I don't even know if we would go there.
Yeah.
I can see how like another full-time person would really complete the group that we have right now. Mm-hmm. But until we figure out precisely who that person is and what kind of skills they need to bring to the table, we're not going to go for it.
Yeah. I think it's just refreshing and maybe unexpected that I can say, of course, firsthand from knowing you and working with you and even sort of looking at the man behind the curtain, that you run a really healthy business, right? And it is sustainable. You have designed it in such a way that you have time for your lifestyle, right? And that your business supports your life, not the other way around. But I think it's surprising, but yet encouraging, that you can be a small studio and stay small and remain small and still be very healthy.
Flexibility. You know, we're not this institutional gorilla with so many structures and people and salaries and overhead, et cetera, in place that if you want to turn the ship a little bit, 15 people have to approve it and get on board. We don't have debt. We don't have financing. We don't have investors. When I want to make a decision, I have to clear it with two people. And at the end of the day, I'm the boss. So, you know, if I really stand behind something, it happens. We rely on our own resources, but that's also not such a bad thing, because that means we never get in way over our heads. Mm-hmm. Because we know, you know, we're a full-time team of three people. There is only so much that we accomplish. There's only so much work that we can go after. There's only so much work that we can do, right? So even the thing about like running after new jobs, well, yeah, that's great. You know, I do plenty of business development, but in the end, you know, we can't take on every project. Like, you know, do we turn down work? We try not to, especially if it's with people that we love to work with and it's new opportunities and potential clients. Do we turn down jobs when they don't fit what we're trying to do? Yeah. Are we afraid to lose clients when they don't fit what we're trying to do? No, we'll do it. We don't do it often because I don't like to burn bridges, but, you know, I had an instance actually yesterday when I washed my hands of a pretty long relationship with someone because it was very, very clear that we just were not on the same page about how work gets done.
And how much fear went into that decision from your standpoint?
Zero.
Oh, because it was very clear.
Zero. Well, I mean, look, again, this kind of goes back to, I want to work with people who respect my time, who you know my whole stance on free work. There's not enough time in this podcast to get into right. that, but
we don't want to spend a time ranting about the whole spec work side of the business.
Okay. No, you'll have to get me for that another time. But it was a situation where I, you know, went out of my way to try and help somebody, and in the end, they were just pissed because at some point I cut them off.
Okay, I see. Sure.
You know, and then it was like, you know what? Like, if this is the case, then anything you're drumming up right now, whatever opportunities you've got, whatever it is, I want no part of. Mm-hmm. Because if you can't work with me while I'm working with you for free, and do it in a way that respects my time and my decisions, then how are we going to work together when you have money, and you feel entitled fully and completely
yes, sure.
to the work that I'm doing?
Yeah, that's the example of no one values that which they get for free.
Indeed.
Right, and that's why those type of relationships can be challenging, to say the least. But it does sound like that being small and staying small has at times required you to say no to those occasional projects or clients opportunities, and I guess it's nice just to hear you honestly say, sure, am I scared at times? Do I worry they're never going to come back? They went to work with a different vendor. Will they come back? So those fears are there, but you're also going into year 7. So apparently it's working.
Yeah, there's always there's such a thing as healthy fear, right? Healthy fear is what gets you up at 6 o'clock in the morning when you need to be up. And, you know, I've done that for the last 3 days. And, maybe healthy fear is a healthy sense of responsibility.
Yeah.
I think is really more what it is for, you know, your own financial well-being, for the financial well-being of the people that you've hired, your family, et cetera, right? And that healthy sense of responsibility just keeps you moving and keeps you moving in the right direction. But I think the moment that becomes sort of a rational fear, you're running your business from this, I love this. This is Kathy's phrase, running your business from a place of fear. She loves this, because we've got friends in the business that do this.
Oh, I see.
And, you know, we're very, very keen about not going in that direction because that is not how I live. And that is certainly not the way that I'm going to run my company.
Yeah, I've always liked putting it this way, that really the best place for an entrepreneur to function is right in the middle of fear and excitement. So equal parts. And I think once I realized that running a business is always going to have a certain amount of fear, but it's always going to have a certain amount of excitement. And as long as those two are in equal, roughly, proportion, it's a very healthy place to be. But it's also refreshing to know that, you know what, the fear part actually never goes away. And I think this is part of why we as entrepreneurs in this industry, we always pursue growth, is because we think if we grow and we get bigger and we get more successful, that the fear is going to go away. And it doesn't. And many times growth leads to more fear.
And more problems.
More responsibility, right? So I love that you, I think you figured out, where am I happy? Where am I comfortable? What's that mixture of fear and excitement going to look like for me? And you've designed your business around that to serve that. And I love that. I just find that very refreshing.
Why, thank you. In as much as possible.
Yes, of course.
In as much as possible.
Yeah, I don't want to, I'm not trying to paint a Pollyanna picture of it, because of course you live in the real world like the rest of us. But you do have a different take on how I'm going to run my business and the boundaries that you've set. And every time I talk to you and you say, oh, this, during this slow season, I'm going to be taking off and going to far-flung place. What's your next trip?
Indonesia.
Okay. And then, yeah, I love this. I'm like, wait, who gets to do that? But you, again, you've figured out the patterns, the cycles in your business. And you say, I know this time of the year and I know that time of the year, and I'm going to very intentionally make this work for my overall life. And it's not just all about the business comes first and everything serves the business.
Well, I think it's also, look, we're in a pretty volatile industry, in a pretty volatile time, just in general, right? I mean, everything is changing. Everything is changing greatly in the next month. Who knows where things are really going to go in this country with respect to business in general.
Yep.
Kind of hard to predict. And just the current events around the world, the technology, the pace with which everything is shifting. It's hard to say how long any of us are going to last in this business. You know, things can change tomorrow and everything we do can become obsolete or just not as in demand or done by algorithms, right? So we just don't know. And I think, you know, for me, there's always just been a healthy dose of reality too, that this isn't eternal. You know, mm-hmm. This is not what I'm going to be doing with myself for the rest of my life. If I'm lucky, it'll last me to whenever I decide to retire. And I'll be very fortunate if that happens. But, you know, for all I know, there's a really good chance that may end before that, again, with just sort of global circumstances that are entirely out of my control.
Well, I've also seen that over the years that we've known each other, that you are investing yourself into things beyond your business. And that is that you speak, you write, you know, you've done several great articles in 99U. And I think that's a really good example of your career is bigger than your business and your life is even bigger than your career, right? So it's almost like I'm picturing concentric circles of, you know, here's your life and then here's your career and then here's your business. But yeah, one day your business may change, it may shift, it may go away. And at that point, I think you're already laying the foundation for, hey, I'm teaching, I'm speaking, I'm writing, I've got all these other things that I'm doing that they're all part of you. Do you think down the road that those things will increase?
I hope so. I mean, I love speaking, I love writing, I love doing these podcasts, frankly. believe it or not, this is my third one this week.
That's fantastic.
It's been a week of podcasts. So, I really do hope that increases, because to me right now, this is just a really awesome unpaid hobby.
Yeah.
You know, it's something I enjoy. It's a way for me to sort of pay it forward and share whatever mistakes and bumps I've hit around along the road. You know, do I think that one day this could replace what I do in a financial sense? Who knows, you know, but I think part of that too is I want to make sure that I'm running this company in a way that maximizes what the people who are with me on this ship are making,
mm-hmm.
You know, to make sure that for as much as we can, you know, their financial situation gets better and that their opportunities to do the things that they may want to do post Undefined Creative grow, you know, because again, it's like none of this is eternal. Look at you. You know, 10 years ago, you probably thought you'd be running Impossible for the rest of your life.
Oh,
and here you are.
I definitely did. Yeah. And the lesson learned was a business is great, but a business does not define your career. And as we've been saying here, your career doesn't even really define your life, your entire life. So yes, everybody will go through transitions at one point or another. One day, your business will come to an end. And that's not necessarily a bad thing, because there's more to do. We all have to grow, we have to evolve, we have to learn. And in my case, I got to take my 20 years of experience and start translating it and giving it back, giving it away. So that's been exciting for me. I wish I could say, yeah, 20 years ago, that was my plan all along. But, you know, full disclosure, you learn as you go. And I had an opportunity to sell it and then realized, wait a minute, I'm not done yet. Just because I sold my business doesn't mean I'm no longer an active, as Tim calls it, elder in the industry. So here I am.
See, another 10 years, I may come work for you and Tim.
That's right. Well, thanks for this conversation. It's great to get your perspective, and I hope people enjoyed kind of hearing a little bit of the behind the scenes on how you run your studio and how
totally.
It fits into your overall life. And I think it's been a really cool conversation.
Well, thank you for doing this. I'm glad we finally got together.
Cheers.
Thanks for listening to Rev Thinking. For more insights on running your creative studio or to ask us a question, visit revthink.com.
I want to tell you about a place to connect that you might not know about. It's our online community called Rev Community. It's a great place to get to know other creative business owners like yourself, to share some thought leadership and read other encouragement, to be challenged in this new marketplace, new technology, ideas, economic trends. And it's a place to research. Check out many of the resources we have online, our videos, and of course, this podcast. Join us today at revthink.com/community. If you're a creative studio owner, feel free to join us today at revthink.com/community. I look forward to seeing you there.